I'm Ron Villano, licensed mental health counselor, addiction counselor, and also certified clinical hypnosis and five practices we own on Long Island in New York area. We are considered one of the largest private practices in the country for mental health, private counseling, and also an author of a book called The Zing.
And what's the name of your practice again?
Family and Personal Counseling.
It's quite an emotional time for us as we reopen society, but there seems to be as much to mourn as there is to be glad about. And much of our protests have been about grief as much as they've been about police brutality.
Yeah, a lot of people are grieving with this pandemic where they can't do the things they want to do. They can't see the people they wanted to see. There are people who have just began relationships and they had to be apart all these months and they're doing with Zoom. And then grief comes in, losing a job. And then you go to the ultimate where somebody lost a loved one, whether it's a grandparent, you know, a parent. And the pain becomes even stronger because with the pandemic, it kind of took your control away from you. So you lost the control of keeping the loved one alive. You had nothing to do with that. You couldn't change it. You couldn't help them. And then the pandemic kept you from going to do the right thing, according to our society, and respectfully go visit the person prior to and get maybe the last seconds with them. And you couldn't do that. So you're building up all this steam. And that steam, along with some losing the person and then adding that pain to it, and still not being able to go to, say, the funeral right now, that is going to heighten the grieving that the person is going through.
How is grief and sadness manifesting itself now? What have you been seeing?
The sadness is becoming even deeper because what it does is, to certain people, it starts to give them the awareness that they're not immortal. They're mortal. And when they see people dying around them, of course, if it's similar age, or it's a family member, a sibling, an aunt, an uncle, then they start to think of the order of life and the order of the family life, and they think that could be them next. Then you tab on the news telling people that you can die from the coronavirus. Now they're thinking, well, wait a minute. Whether they were diagnosed with it or not, they'll say, I believe that has something to do with it because they would have never died if this pandemic wasn't going on. Meanwhile, they're finding out that a lot of people have passed away without the coronavirus being attached. It was due to illness, due to age, many other different illnesses. But I just want your audience to know, too, if we're speaking about grieving and the loss of someone, there is no order of grieving. There is no stages of grieving. There's no anger first or denial. Everyone grieves in their own way. So don't look at yourself in the mirror and say, I should be crying hysterically because I just found out a loved one passed away today. And maybe you're not crying hysterically at that moment. And you may have family members that are crying hysterically, can't work, find it hard to breathe, find it hard to go on. I mean, so many other emotions come out and you're not feeling that. I found that within families, when the person isn't grieving the way everyone else is and they're not crying at that moment, they think that that person didn't have the same feeling for the loss. But what happens is certain people are in shock. And that shock of the loss sometimes won't come out a year, two, 3 years later. There are people, all of a sudden, their lives are disrupted. They don't know why. And you say, well, did you have a loss? Oh, that was 4 years ago, 3 years ago. Could be 10 years ago, believe it or not. But they pushed it down. They suppressed it, repressed it. And then it starts to surface up later on. When their lives become good, believe it or not, and their minds are calm, it starts to release what's in the subconscious. It starts to come up. And they don't know what's disturbing their life. So if they go to a qualified therapist, and they're doing the right work with them, then they're going to find out, well, possibly the loss is having an effect on today, and then you start working on that. But just remember, there is no order of grieving process. All what's happening is a lot of times that person is stuffing it down in some form of shock.
How can we be understanding of others as they go through their own personal grief?
People want to control other people. And other people should be thinking the way I'm thinking, and other people should be saying what I'm saying. And like you said in the beginning of the show, with all the stuff that's going on with the riots and everything else, basically everyone wants everyone to think like them. When we give people permission to be themselves, that's when we have a bingo going. That's when we win. And the primary person you need to give permission to is yourself. Once you give yourself permission to share your feelings, to feel what you're feeling, and you do that by journaling, you do that by some form of meditation or relaxation time a day. It could be 5 minutes a day where you just do nothing and just sit and put the computer down, the phone down, and anything that has to do with social media down. And then you let your mind just calm and let the thoughts come in and look for nothing to happen other than you had a moment of quiet. The more you empower yourself, the the more then you will allow people to empower themselves, and possibly you can empower them by being supportive, not telling them what to do, but supportive by just listening. Sometimes people just need to be heard, and heard means that after they spoke to you, you didn't nod, yeah, that you definitely got involved and maybe helped and supported them in accomplishing what they're looking to do. So that's how I see it. When someone is sad out there and you see all this stuff going on and you want everybody to be, I want everybody happy today. That's fantastic. So do I. Yeah. But are you happy? So I just see that a lot. I see a lot of times, even in the practice and with all our therapists, it's a common thing that people want to control other people. And that's what causes most of us from not being happy most of our lives, because we're giving a part of ourselves out all the time. Parents want to control the children's actions, their school grades, their this, their that, relationships, they want to control them. So I'm not controlling. I just don't think she should go there with her friends. So I don't think he should go away on the weekend with his or whatever it is. That's another form of control. So just remember, the more you're telling someone what to do or what not to do, you're giving a piece of your power out to them. And when you give the power out, just like a battery, you have less power to do the things you want to do for yourself. So you're just draining. And in my book, I have a chapter called The Battery, and The Battery talks about that.
As we head back into society, some tips, especially if we're feeling afraid. So many people are not wearing masks. They're not social distancing. A lot of people are on edge, too, which can affect our lives. I went to return some clothing that I got via Amazon during the pandemic. And I went back and I had my mask on, and my mask slipped down over my nose. And the woman who was doing my return said, "Pat, your mask slipped." And she was really upset with me. I was like, "Oh, sorry." But people are really on edge. How can we deal with that?
Once again, if I saw someone and their mask slipped down, they were walking by me, and I felt that it's going to endanger me in any way, and whatever my, you know, level is of fear, I would move myself away from them. I would not make a comment to that person, because I know that would be combative, and that would be infringing on their rights. Because if I tell them, put your mask up on your nose, and they're a good person like you, you didn't have any intent of that.
No.
You know, but if somebody looked at you and they felt uncomfortable and had to be behind you, they said, "Would you mind if you pull your mask up? Because I'm right here behind you."
Sure.
Or something like that, it's said. But it seems like, again, with everything going on out there and all the anger, it just seems like in the media and everything else, they're fueling this, because they're talking about the president doesn't wear the mask. They're emphasizing that. They're emphasizing the other person wears the mask. Then I don't know about you, Patricia. We spoke about this before. I have to tell you, the majority of places I go to, especially if they're outside, I very rarely see anyone wearing a mask. Now, I wear one because, honestly, I just feel it just makes people comfortable, whether it's working or not. I just think it makes certain people comfortable. It doesn't hurt me to see somebody wear a mask when I go by. I mean, I feel pretty comfortable knowing, hey, you're doing what the doctors are telling you. I'm not going to combat science, personally. So to me, I'm listening to that. When I see the spike in the other area, once again, the news gets so twisted up. Now you hear the spikes aren't really about the hospitalization. It's about this. Then you hear about this. It's about more people getting tested. So of course you're going to see higher numbers because now the tests are available. All this stuff is creating, I think, a lot of negativity and fear. So when you walk in the store and they see your mask slip down, they're so pep. You know, the pep rally in high school before the game, they've been to the pep rally of, "You have to have your mask on or I'm going to give it to you." How did that make you feel when they said that?
It surprised me, but I was glad because it was a homemade mask, first of all. It was actually my first foray into mask making, so it wasn't the best mask. So it slipped, and I was actually glad to be told that it had slipped. I didn't even realize it, and that's fine. But I was surprised at how upset she was. She was really over-the-top upset. And I was like, "Oh, sorry. As soon as I apologized, she backed down. That was okay. But I was just very surprised. And everybody seemed to be walking on eggshells in the store. So, But that was the first day of reopening.
Yeah, well, I think they better leave Patricia Farnick alone. That's what I think. That's what I'm saying. But, you know, with grieving, a couple of grief tips for your audience into the grieving process. One is recognize your loss. Don't be afraid to recognize it. People will feel numb for a while. You could call it shock, you could call it stunned, you could call it I can't believe, but you're feeling numb. But what the numb does, it accepts that loss a little bit at a time to process through you. Yeah. So it's important to know that and acknowledge the loss and pain that you had. Don't go inward. and acknowledge it, meaning journal it if no one's around. Talk out loud to yourself. Call somebody that you know that isn't part of that loss. So there's no opinion about what's going on or conversation to solidify more negativity. So speak to maybe a friend that was a little bit out of the inner circle or way out of the inner circle and say, you know, I just wanted to talk about what my grandfather or my grandma or whoever they had lost of, or pet. You know, people have lost pets at this time. And then be with the pain. Be with it. You know, you're hurting. You're allowed to admit I'm in pain and I'm feeling it. That's a normal part of the grieving process. Denying the loss will not lessen the pain. It actually prolongs it. You know, after losing my son, Michael, the biggest thing was I talk about my son. If you hung out with me, Patricia, for a week, I guarantee you would think my son, Michael, is waiting for me at home. Not that I'm in denial that I lost my son, but he's still part of me. His spirit's here. So he's part of like my other kid. I would just talk about him, about what he did when he was younger, seeing how he was. He was a pain in the neck sometimes. You know, you know, I was true about him. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You know, Michael was, he was a real athletic, excitable kid. So be with the pain. And also accept all of your feelings, even the feelings you don't like, such as fear, anger, guilt comes in, sadness, heartbreak, an overwhelming feeling of like, say, disorganization, you know, you can't get everything right, characteristic reactions to, say, significant loss, avoiding naming and feeling our feelings. Like our feelings will be expressed in unexpected ways. So you want to name them. You want to feel it. I feel sad. I feel angry. You know, I feel whatever words you want to use. Put them out, whether they're on paper or discuss them with someone. Sometimes people in the same household had the same loss, but they're going to grieve totally differently if they're able to sit together and share how they're feeling without someone opinionating themselves about what the other statement was from the other person. It's good without trying to control the other person's conversation. It's good to release that because both of you know who you were talking about. And if you want any more, you know, I have a million in my head. And believe it or not, you are vulnerable. So be gentle with yourself. And remember, you're not alone. Always seek comfort as you need it. Seek it. Sometimes you feel alone and you feel it's only about you. And I know that feeling when I lost my son, Michael. I felt like I was in a little corner of my house, depressed, and no one's going to understand and nobody cares. And there's so many things come in your head. And you didn't want anyone to be happy around you. You didn't want to hear music. You didn't want to know there was a pizza party. You didn't want to know that food was good. You know, you didn't want to eat. So just remember that you're very vulnerable. So be gentle to yourself and you're not alone. And also people have suicidal thoughts and that's a symptom of your pain. It doesn't mean the person's going to truly kill themselves, but they want to die. They feel that depressed. They want to die, but they don't have the ability to do it to themselves. So don't panic. But I'm a big believer saying all this is to get a counselor, because if you get a therapist right away, it doesn't have to be a grieving therapist. If you get a therapist right away to start talking to, it's the best thing you could do. Don't look for any kind of productivity out of it. Just know you're just going to vent and you have a place to go to someone impartial who knows what they know what to do with the words that you're saying and the emotions that you're feeling. They know how to help guide you through that. So doing it alone, totally by yourself, I believe is not going to work because the guy you're talking to tried that.
Yeah.
And it didn't work. It didn't work. Yeah. And keep a journal. You know, like I say, always keep the journal going and allow yourself the physical exercise, talking, and give yourself permission to feel rotten and then share that with others. But if you don't take that information and share it, all you're going to do is start to go inward. And when you feel angry inward, that's where depression comes from. When you feel it outward, it's a whole different feeling. It's a whole different thing. Because you're going to implode when you go within yourself and you hold it in. It's a jack-in-the-box theory, I call it. Then, sooner or later, it's going to pop up. So these are some tips. And one last thing, may sound like it's hard to do, and it is, but I would focus on it. Get plenty of rest and eat regular meals. Even if you're going to, if you ate two slices of pizza and you could only eat a half, that's fine. Keep the routine. Routine is the key to most things in life. And any successful person will tell you, no matter what they do, that routine is the key. You've got to maintain that routine in your life. And when that goes off, that's your pattern to tell you there's something going on that I need some help. And there's nothing wrong in needing help. According to my daughters, I need a lot of help. So I get help. And my phrase that I wrote was, honor your loved one's life by living yours. So when you're living your life, you're really honoring the person you lost. Instead of doing nothing and letting it take you down, then that person's life, in my opinion, went in the abyss. But when you're living your life and you're speaking about them and you're taking that adversity, like losing my son Michael was devastating. And when I lost him, I said, he took my life. Now I say Michael gave me life. Because of the loss of Michael, my son, we joined his spirit to mine. And now we help thousands of people because of that. I would not be the same person today if I didn't lose my son. So as depressed and down as I was for years, it's just like now, it's like a story of Job. Now we're all over and we're helping people. So that's my motive, is to help the person sitting in a corner of the house who's depressed like I used to be, and maybe we could touch that person through our words. And your show, I believe, is doing that.
I'm so grateful that you made time for me today.
Oh, anytime. I mean, this is wonderful to get the word out. And if we touched one person today, we did a fantastic job.